Today's daf is daf tet vav in Masechet Bava Metzia, Perek Rishon. We're learning Shnayim Ochazim B'Talit, and we're in the middle of the sugya of the din of Achrayut, and what happens if somebody buys something from a Gazlan. Over there, Shmuel had paskened that in such a case, and according to Reb Nachman, even in a case where the Gazlan had guaranteed any investments that would be made by the buyer would be paid back by the Gazlan if it turned out that he didn't own it, the halacha is he cannot collect the Shevach, and the reason he can't collect the Shevach is because it's Mechzik Ribi. Now, the problem that we raised yesterday was the Mishnah that says that there is a case of both Perot and Shevach which can be taken out of Nechasim that are not Meshubadim, which cannot be taken from Nechasim Meshubadim, which seems to imply that there is a case where you get both Shevach and Perot. The problem is that we can't figure out what that case is unless a Gazlan also does have to pay back Shevach. Because if the case that the Mishnah was referring to, of both Perot and Shevach, was referring to a Mocher who now had to pay back the loss to a Balchov that collected the land from his buyer, the din over there is that a Balchov doesn't have a right to Perot. So why in the world would it say he collects the Perot? And if it's talking about the case of the Gazlan, then according to Shmuel, even though he does get the Perot, but why in the world would he get the Shevach? Because there is no din of Shevach. That was the problem. It seems to be that there is a case of din in which you get both Shevach and Perot. The only case that would make any sense is where Nigzal is coming to recover from a buyer who had invested or who had grown Perot. And in that case, you could take both the Perot, which are distinguished from Shevach by being actually sitting there no longer being just Shevach on the property, but a separate entity of Perot versus Shevach, which is an investment in the actual property, and you would get both. But this seems to show that indeed it's wrong to say that there is no din of Shevach because it's Mechzik Ribit. This was the question that we were struggling with yesterday, and we had a number. So far, we've had two approaches. Yesterday, we had two approaches to this question. So on the one hand, the last approach that we said was a fascinating approach, was Rava's approach, that it's simply talking about a case where you were recovering it, not in the case of a mocher, but directly from the Gazlan, like it said in the Braita. So you'll say, well, so then I don't understand. If you're recovering from the Gazlan, so then what exactly does it mean that you're going to have to be paying him for the property? Where is the property? So there, even though it uses the word Karen, comes out of the Nechasim Meshubadim, and there should be no Karen, because the whole point is that I'm getting back my land. Now we're dealing with, but what about the Perot that he grew on my land? What about the Shevach? Well, why in the world did it discuss what to do about the Karen? That's what led us to believe that, I mean, it's absurd to say that the Gazlan is trying to get the Karen. He stole the land, right? So that was our problem. Rava came up with a brilliant solution. No, it's talking about the victim of the Gazela, the original owner, and you'll ask me, what Karen? What Karen? The Gazlan stole the land and ripped it up in order to find oil and didn't find it. So now he owes him money for the land. Where is that money going to be collected from out of the Gazlan's hide? So there we're saying that you can collect even if the Gazlan had property and he sold it. That value is the Karen. That is, you can go ahead and collect. Masha Enkein, the Shevach, which is like with Mechira over here, the Shevach that the Gazlan invested, that comes out of Nechasim that the Gazlan owns, but not out of Nechasim that he had sold. Like all issues where there's no way to know in advance what you're up against. There's no way of knowing what he was going to invest, so therefore there's no way to be a buyer of his other properties to say, oh, gosh, you know, you knew that there might be an investment at the time that I bought it. I had no idea that he was going to throw in $1 million into the Brooklyn Bridge, and now you're going to come back to me. So therefore, you can only collect it from Nechasim, which are not Meshubadim. Perfectly beautiful explanation, which avoids the whole question of Akenami Gazlan, and therefore is completely irrelevant to the discussion that we're having about Shmuel and Reb Nachman and Shmuel. That was Rava's approach. Now, before that, well, we didn't come up with this idea of looking for oil in the field. I mean, that's certainly not the normal meaning of it. So the way that we had understood it before was that we're talking about, this we brought from the Braita that explains the second piece of the Mishnah, that the case was over here talking about, indeed, a Balchov, even though it had mentioned Gazlan, we have to change the Lashon of the Braita. Reb Nachman said, look, you're right, there's no way to explain it, but we'll change the language. Okay. But the two cases in the Mishnah, we'll have to say, are indeed two cases. Perot is talking about not a Balchov, because I don't get Perot, and Shevach is talking about a Balchov and not a Gazlan. So that didn't bother me. Okay.
And how did Rabbi Yochanan get Rabbi said that Perot?
remember that there were two steps here. First, there was the Mishnah itself. The Mishnah itself, Rav Nachman was willing to say that there's not one case. There's two cases. We're just talking about all the different cases. There's one case where you recover Perot. You only recover Perot from a Gazlan. There's another case where you recover Shevach. You recover Shevach from a Balchov, not from a Gazlan. What's bothering you? But in the end, what was bothering us was the Braita that was Mefarish, the Mishnah. And for that, he changed the Girsa to read not Nigzal, in a case of Gazlan, but rather a case of a Mocha. Of a Balchov? Okay. According to Rava, there was no problem in the first place. There was never any Mathira mentioned in this Braita. And the Chab of Rava is that it's talking about a case where there was damage to the Karen. And therefore you could be referring to the actual recovery of the Karen, even though the Soda is being Yotze Mitachat Yado. That was where we were holding. Today, we continue from the bottom line of Amud Beit, in which Rava Baravuna Amar, we're talking about over here, Kigon Shinetalua Masikim. What happened over here is that a Gazan indeed stole something and developed this field. And what happened over here is that the Masikim, who had, these were basically mafia people, who had their eye on this Gazan, and they had been had dealings with him, and he owed them drug money, whatever it was. So then they went ahead, and they took it from him. Now the deal is, we had before, that was a fair commission we had back in Baba Kama. Somebody steals something, and because he steals a piece of property, and because of his relations with the drug dealers and the mafia, they go ahead and they take it, and they would not have taken it otherwise, that he has to return now another sada. So when it said over here, Vare Yotzeit Mitachat Yado, which was a whole problem, because Yotzeit Mitachat Yado, we thought meant that the court recovered it, and that would mean that we're going to go now to collect Shevach from the Gazan. It's not talking about the court recovered it, it's talking about the Masikin took it. Vare Yotzeit Mitachat Yado, through the pirates. So the pirates took it away from him. That's what it meant. So now the Nigzal is coming to collect, not the buyer. The Nigzal, there is no buyer. So that's all that it's saying. Here, you're saying, but if it's Yotzi Mitachat Yado, he got it back. Right. It's the pirates that were Yotzi Mitachat Yado, not Beit Din. So he didn't get it back. You don't have to come on to Rava's Pirish that it's talking about that he was looking for oil. Over here, it's simply talking about that he never gets it back, his field, because Misi can take it. So therefore, it's the same case as Rava, basically, except we're replacing the oil wells with a Misi. That's all. So if Bar Nigzal Legvot Keren, if he wants his money up in the property back, that he gets Minachasim Meshubadim of the Ganav that he sold. But Bar Nigzal Legvot Peirot, if he wants now the Peirot that were on his property, so over there, he's Govem Minachasim Menecharin, okay? Now, I mean, there's also, these are very simple cases. I mean, why did Rava, Rava could have said that. Why did Rava say the case is that he turned it into a parking lot or an oil well? So Rava lo'amar ki Rava Baravuna. I mean, what Rava Baravuna is saying a simple pirish. The reason that Rava doesn't like it is because it says Yotze Mitachat Yado. When you say Yotze Mitachat Yado, you're generally referring to a legal procedure, not referring to pirates. So Yotze Mitachat Yado, any idiot would have read that. I mean, I can't prove that it doesn't mean with pirates. But certainly the words are normally used, Bedina. It means that you went into court, Bedina Mashma. Varehi Yotzi Mitachat Yado in court. In which case you can't tell me the guy didn't get back his Karen, he got back his Karen. So why is it being Tovea Karen? That was the problem. I came up with a brilliant solution. It was Tovea the Karen because even though he's getting back his field now looks like a piece of garbage because it was all dug up in order to find oil in it. The reason a Rabba Baravuna doesn't like Rava's pshat, because when it says Varehi Yotzi Mitachat Yado, it's mashma that it, the way it is Yotze Mitachat Yado, not the remainders of the field is Yotze Mitachat Yado. So the mashma'ut of those words is be'ina mashma. And if it's be'ina, what Karen could there possibly be? Unless, of course, he never got back the field. So therefore, it's talking about pirates. That's how I would say it. Because each one is stressing a different, what they consider to be the main sense of the Yotze Mitachat Yado. But, I mean, there's no really substantial machlokas here. It's a question of how best to fit the case with the language. All right? Excellent. Now, Rav Ashi says, look, the whole thing doesn't even start. Because what we could say is simply, Litzdarim Katani. There are two separate cases over here. Let's look at it like this. Kagon Shigazal Sadem Mechaviro Mele'a Peirot. Okay? Guy steals with Peirot, and he goes and he's Achalata Peirot, and he's Mocher et Asadeh. So now, there are three different people that are involved as far as the victim is concerned. So what we have over here is the Gazlan qua Gazlan. The Gazlan is the guy who eats the pears and hasn't returned it. And the same guy. And the buyer. So that's what he's saying. If now he goes ahead and he sells the field, the lokeach of the field is coming to be Govek Karen. That's all that he's got. There never were payroll. He never grew anything in it. Gover Minichos B'Shuvah. If the victim was coming to be Gover the Peirot from the Goslin, then he can only be Gover the Peirot from Minichos B'nei Karein. What's your problem now? Your whole problem with Shmuel was that you thought that it meant that the guy who had bought the field is going to be able to get Shevach back. No. It's very simple. There's two different issues, that's all. It's my Peirot, the Nigzal say. You, Gazlan, ate my Peirot. Pay me back. Nothing here that has anything to do with a Baal Chov. That was your issue. You said, well, I mean, it's talking about Baal Chov doesn't have Peirot. What Baal Chov? Who Baal Chov? It's talking about the Nigzal. The Nigzal had Peirot. And that's the simplest explanation. So, ask the Gemara, but let me just ask you over here. Bein l'rova, bein l'rava barav huna, mil val pehu, mil val peh, eno goveh, minachasim, mishubatim. I mean, the way they learned the case. So then, you're talking over here that there was indeed Karen, because either the field was wrecked or it was stolen by pirates, and there was also now the Shevach issue. But the issue over here is that essentially there was no contract. There was just a Goslin. Okay, so it's a Milval Peh. I mean, there's no way for people to be Shomer from Gezela to make it a registered Gezela. So how could a buyer protect himself from a Gezela? So it's, why am I able to collect from the Chasim Mishul Badim? Says the Gemara, you're right. It would have to be talking about that the court had already issued a demand for payment. Now that is certainly right. Everybody knows about that. So the victim had already sued the Goslin. The court now issued a paper which everyone knows about. So Amad Bedin. So first it was Amad Bedin. This idiot didn't bother checking with the title company to find out that there was a judgment against. It's none of his business what the judgment was for. He doesn't. But the fact is, it's a judgment against this piece of property. He didn't check. So now he goes ahead and he buys it after it was already Amad Bedin. So now it's not a Milvah Bebah, it's a Milvah Bishtar. And he's going to lose out. Well, I don't get it. So then, and if there were payroad. So then you're telling me it was Amad Bedin. So then there's a judgment against it for the payroad also. So then why wouldn't you be able to collect from the Chasim Mishubadim? The whole reason we weren't collecting from the Chasim Mishubadim is because, well, I didn't know that there was going to be payroad that were coming, but over here the payroad already were there. And there was already a judgment. And there was now a paper against this, putting a lien on the court on this thing. What do I care what it's from? It's from Karen, it's from payroad, it's from flying saucers. I mean, the bottom line is, it's now clearly registered as having a lien against it. Well, it's talking about that there was a judgment for against the value of the Karen, but not against the value of the payroll. Oh, for heaven's sakes. But it's completely arbitrary. So notice, now we have an arbitrary explanation. My, Puska, what'd you do? You took a knife here, and you split it into two. For no reason at all. No, it's not. It's not for no reason at all. Stop it, Amiltak. You tell the Inish Karnatava Beresha. Look, the norm is that people want to get judgments that they can get instantly. Okay? To start proving to you that there were payroll and how much payroll and so on, that's going to be a whole issue. And we're going to prove, he's going to say, no, the payroll were not worth that, they were worth this, and I don't know, and we're going to get witnesses, and they can drag on forever. Let me first get a judgment. Here's my contract. I own this field. Does this guy have any riot that he bought the field? No, because he didn't. Thank you. Give me back my field. That takes 10 minutes. Okay. Now we'll be in court for the next year to worry about the payroll. All right, fine, I'll take my time on that. So the derech is, in practical terms, you have what, paska, that's called taking a knife and splitting a sugya, makes perfectly good sense. A guy has a judgment against the value of the karen. He doesn't have a judgment against the value of the payroll. So kitav inish karnat of operation. Okay, so we are left with an ability to answer the Mishnah with its associated brayot that indicated that Shmuel was wrong. The way Reb Nachman understood that according to Shmuel, there is no way to recover Sheva in a case where you invested in the Brooklyn Bridge. That's our shortcut for case of Nigzal. You invested in Brooklyn Bridge, you're never going to get your investment back from the guy who sold it to you because what actually happened over here was a loan, not a sale. There never was any Brooklyn Bridge that he owned. And therefore, we're worried about the music rebit, right? So we had a lot of indications that that was not the case. We now had basically five explanations of how to get out of that problem. Either we changed the gears, so like we said originally, in the second part, we were able to answer the way Rava answered it, or we were able to answer the way we're talking about pirates, like the way Rabbi Baruch Huna answers it, or we're talking about it was Litzadim Katani, the way that we said over here Rav Ashi answered it. Okay, fine. But we were left with the possibility that Shmuel was right. Ask the Gemara in Shmuel himself. You're trying to tell me that Shmuel holds, bottom line, that a lokeach from a gazlan will never be able to recover his painting of the Brooklyn Bridge. That's what you said. But I can show you that Shmuel himself doesn't hold that. Because Amalei Shmuel Rav Chinina Bar Shilat. Shmuel told Rav Chinina Bar Shilat, who was a sofer who would sell contracts, so people would come to him. So he was giving him now basic rules. And he told him, look, make sure that you ask. When you are writing a shtar of a sale, try to, it's your job to make sure, there's no attorney in those days, there's a sofer now, makes certain that all of the necessary clauses are inserted in the contract. He's the contract writer, which is what we go to an attorney for today. So the sofer represents now the attorney. Therefore, I'm telling you that you should always make it your business to ask, when they're sitting there, you're writing out the shtar of the mechira, ask whether you can insert a shtar, into the shtar, a clause, that guarantees shufra, shifcha, uperet. That in the event that this guy is going to be coming back with a claim that the karka was taken from him, that you will guarantee this karka with the best of your property, that was shefra, that we spoke about before, shufra, that if there was any investment, you will pay back the investment. And if there were any peyrot that were grown, you will pay back the peyrot. Because that's fair. And you want them to fight. If the guy has not made that agreement, discuss it and see if you can insert it into the sale, the bill of sale. That way, at least you know your buyer's protected. You did your best to protect him. If the guy refuses, the seller refuses, make sure that the buyer understands the risks that he's taking. So this is all advice that an attorney really, a mensual attorney, will make certain that he does from both sides. So now, explain to me, please, why a contract would include shivcha v'peri, that the seller is taking responsibility for returning shevach and peirot, because you understand what I'm going to be asking you, don't you? I mean, b'mai. If we're talking about that the balchov of the seller is going to come to collect, so mi'it l'peri, I thought Shmuel himself is the one who holds that a balchov can never collect peirot anyway, because the guy could say, excuse me, you have a lien against those peirot? And I'll say, no, I have a lien against karka. Well, thanks. You wait a minute until I get my payroll. You can't take my payroll, which makes perfectly good sense, right? So, okay, then it can't be talking about a balchov. Because I'm a shmo balchov govet hashevach. Yes. You can collect the sprinkler system. We'll see why you can collect the sprinkler system. But you cannot collect the payroll of a payroll law. So therefore, these clauses that he's telling him to make sure to insert into a contract are actually there to cover you against false ownership. And a sale that was under false pretense. That's the point. So over there, he will have to return peirot. There it's going to be taken away. The whole thing's going to be taken away by the nigzal. And now you're going to have to deal with the gazlan. So make sure that you put over there that the seller, who is a gazlan, is guaranteeing that peirot's in the best of his property and so on and so forth. Right? And it says over there, Shevach. This is Shmuel who's giving its advice. According to you, Reb Nachman, Shmuel said that even if you're writing in a contract, you can't get peirot, Shevach, because it's mifsik ribit. So how can you possibly believe Reb Nachman's report that I leave it to Shmuel? There's no way, even if you're writing in a contract, that you're going to be able to recover the investments that you made from a gazlan. And here he's telling you to put it in the contract. For what purpose? So now we got, forget about the Brightas and the Mishnah. Shmuel himself doesn't agree with what Reb Nachman is claiming Shmuel says. Vomer Shmuel Balchov Govet Hashevach, Shevach Einav Operot Lo, Elala Belokev Migazla. Omer Rav Yosef says, gentlemen, you are torturing yourselves for no reason. Because even, and the truth is you've been torturing yourself all along for no reason. Because even if Shmuel said that it doesn't help to write in a contract, Shevach, he was talking about where you're paying money. And because what's the chashash over here? Mirzik Kiribit. When you're not paying money, you're paying property. Nobody knows what you're paying. Where's the Mirzik Kiribit? So over there, you're saying, well, I mean, you paid $100,000 for the property, and now that the property was removed by the Nigzal, you're getting back $110,000. So it doesn't look good, even though the mice are getting that back because of your investment. Okay, you're right. It doesn't look good because it was only a loan. There never was a sale. You're right. But somebody's going to know what the collection was from property. Nobody knows money that passed hands. They only know property passed hands. There's certainly 10% variations in the value of property. They'll figure I got back what it was that I paid. What's the big deal? Therefore, says Rabbi Yosef, in a case where you're paying back property, the Goslin owns other property you can collect from. There's no problem. And then there's no problem all along here. Kagonchi Yeshlo Karka. That's not an issue. I'm going to buy a what? So, in other words, according to you, we don't have a problem with ribit. If it isn't really ribit, it's a mirzik ribit as long as you're paying back karka. Let me ask you something. One of the classic problems of ribit is going into a neighbor and borrowing a bottle of milk. So that's called sa'ab is sa'ab. So you're going to pay back. You're going to pay back the same thing that you borrowed. It's all very nice. But what are you going to do about value changes, inflation, government grants, so on and so forth? Maybe you're going to borrow a bottle of milk that's worth 6 shekel and pay back a bottle of milk that's worth 8 shekel. What do you do about ribit there? So you're not allowed to do sa'ab is sa'ab. So, according to you, we should say no. You can pay back sa'ab is sa'ab as long as it's being paid in karka. Did you ever hear such a thing? So, let me now borrow whatever it is, $100,000 worth of stuff. I'll pay you back in karka. Then it's okay. You're saying, even though I'm paying back current value. Why? Well, because who's going to notice? I mean, did you ever hear such a thing? That who's going to notice? We apply that to a chashash of mirzik ribit. So you're going to say, in such a case, v'chim mutar li levot sa'ab is sa'ab. I have karka. Since I have karka, who's going to notice? Now, because of this lashon b'makom sheyesh lo karka, where the mashmaut is, he's really going to pay back the bottle of milk. He's not going to pay back the karka. Because of this, there are rishonim who explain the issue over here is not that he's actually collecting the karka, but he could have collected the karka. They argue with Rashi's approach, which is the approach that I just gave you, and they say the point isn't because you don't notice how much is being paid. The point is that when there is karka that exists at the time, keeps things happy and exciting. So when there's karka, you see, it's as if the value of the original transaction was already upped by liens against that karka for whatever I would put in. So then it's not mizikaribit, which is a difficult concept, but it fits in more into the language of sheyesh karka. I mean, what do we really think? We're talking about a case where guys paying back a bottle of milk with karka. I mean, maybe anakinami in such a case we'd go problem sabasami now. So
is it just that it appears that way to the outside world?
We're gonna get there in a minute. Omer of Yosef, there's a big difference. Because, look, there's no comparison. Hatam halva'a, ochas vina. But let's understand something. There's two types, as Scott just raised the issue. There's two types of issues that have to do with the ribit, besides actual ribit dioraita. There's what's called avak ribit, which are extensions of ribit, which aren't really ribit, such as the case of sa'ab sa'an. We're over there, since there was no additional value defined at the time of the so-called loan, it wasn't really exactly a loan. So over there, it's an extension, derabbanan, of a dioraita. Okay, but I mean, there could be a case where it actually would be a dioraita. In other words, you say, okay, look, the point is that next week the prices are meant to go up. Government's taking off the subsidies. I'm giving you now basically 6 shekel worth of milk. I want you to pay me back 8 shekel worth of it. That would be ribit dioraita. So in that kind of case, we're very machmir. So we're not going to allow you to abasa just because you have property. Over here, the whole thing is really not conducted as a loan at all. You were saying it boils down to a loan, but none of us were engaged in a loan. We were engaged in buying and selling. There is no way that midioraita you can come to repeat in buying and selling. Even if it turns out that he sold you the wrong thing and that it wasn't really a sale, it's not derech halva'a. Therefore, this whole thing is a tremendous chumrah, which only has to do with appearance. Okay, appearances, if you can hide the appearances, we're not going to be machmer. Where you're talking about sa'abasa, you're dealing with more than the question of appearances. You're dealing with an extension of actual ribit in halva'a. Over there, we're not going to allow you because you don't notice. You're right. It would be stupid for somebody to say that, said Rabbi Yosef, and I never intimated such a thing. But over here, where it's an extension of the dinim of ribit, a misunderstanding of mixing, then what's important is the mixing. And what isn't noticeable isn't noticeable, because that's all I'm concerned about. That's one approach. So now, Rabbi Yosef, according to this, will remove any of the issues that we have, because according to him, it's very simple to find the case, Aliba de Shmuel, when you're collecting Shevach. So if you're collecting Shevach against Karka, that was extant at the time of the sale, no problemo. Another lashon in Rabbi Yosef is this. Ikidiyam Rabbi Yosef, that's a tremendous change in our assumptions about Shmuel's din. It's talking about over here that they made a kinyan suder, and he was mechayev himself at the time of the sale, that there's going to be shevach. And this is a chiyuv that comes before there was any sense of, you've kept my money, I expect such and such in return. There was no keeping of money, there was no issue of returning of money, there was only a guarantee of shevach with a kinyan. So now everybody understands that I'm paying for that kinyan, not for hamtanat ma'ot, because there wasn't any hamtanat ma'ot. I didn't even have your money for 3 minutes. You're not going to pay ribit on my keeping your money for 3 minutes. That's the point. And in this lashon, says Abaye, what? I mean, so you're telling me that as long as you're ekonomi yado, when you have sabasa, you borrowed a bottle of milk, it's not a problem because you made a kinyan suder, and now there's no gezer of ribit? And again, in this lashon, he said the same thing. And Rabbi Yosef answers, well, of course not. But that's because you're really borrowing something. But over here, the whole issue is for appearance's sake. And for appearance's sake, the konu miyado makes it clear that there's no schar hamtanat ma'ot, because I was already mitzchayev before there was any hamtanat ma'ot. You didn't use your machine last night, I can see. Gufa. I'm getting back now into Shmuel's maimer, okay? So Shmuel said, Balchov goveh et hashevach, but not the peirot. Okay, so a balchov can be goveh shevach, which is the exact opposite of the case of the gazlan, if the gazlan stole something or had peirot on. Omar Rava Teda, look, it's obvious that a balchov has to pay the shevach, because read the boilerplate for a bill of sale, okay? It says in a bill of sale, kach kotev lo mochel elokeach. Ana ekum v'ashpi v'atke v'amrik zvine ilen, inon v'amlehon v'shivchehon, v'ekum kadamoch,
V'tzavi zvina danan v'kabel adui. So what we always say in a contract is that I am going to get up and I will quiet and I will clear any type of legal problems that are on here. And furthermore, I accept myself the value of these properties, the investments that have been put into these properties, and I will replace it for you. And this buyer read these terms and accepted them on himself. Some understand that the meaning is, if I'm guaranteeing the shevach, so obviously he could take the shevach. But others understand more than that. What is the point of saying, and the buyer did see these clauses and accepted it upon himself? Obviously, it was all for his benefit. What do you mean, I need his agreement? Of course he accepted it on himself. Ah, because it's not entirely for his agreement, because in his benefit. Because what he was telling him was, look, you're agreeing that the Baal Chov will collect the shevach, and then you'll come back to me and I'll pay for it. So, I mean, that's not exactly what I would like. I would like him not to be able to collect the shevach at all. So therefore, we put into the contract, and you saw my guarantee, understood the implications of this guarantee, which meant that you may end up losing your investment, and you'll have to get it repaid. And you accepted that. So from here, you see clearly that the Baal Chov is able to take that shevach. So are you saying, if a person gives a gift, generally a gift, obviously, don't have a boilerplate guarantee. I'm giving you a gift. You say, thank you very much. I mean, you don't give me a whole drusha. No, I don't want them to be able to take it. Look, you know, don't look a gift towards in a mouth. It's not good enough for you. Don't take it. What do I care? So therefore, you would be saying that if it was a matana, you're telling me that the Baal Chov cannot be terif the shevach because the buyer, or the receiver of the gift, never agreed. I never agreed that he could take my investments. I don't intend to invest in a piece of property that your Baal Chov is going to take. Omalei? Yeah, no. What's so bad about that? You're looking at me askance. Are you saying that somebody who gets a gift, a Baal Chov, is not going to be able to take money that he invested in this gift when it turns out that there was a lien? That's right. That's what I'm saying. What bothers you about that? What do you mean? What bothers me? I mean, rationally, you're telling me that a guy who gives a gift, he is giving more than if he sold it. Because if he sold it, so then his lender, someone lent money to him, who's now his creditor, is going to be able to collect the shevach. But he gives a gift, now he's misale the creditor. Does that make sense to you? Yeah. I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. It makes perfectly good sense. Yafev, of course it makes good sense. Because look, if you're talking about the goof of the karka, right? You're saying he can collect the goof of the karka. Why can't he collect the shevach? Why should he be able to collect the shevach? He had a lien only against the goof of the karka. Masha Einkein, what you're talking about over here, where he's accepting now the fact that he's going to be viewing this piece of property as if it belonged to the Baal Chov, so then he would be the equivalent of someone who went down into somebody else's property and he improved the property. Okay, I understand that, but over here, this is not your shevach. Why should you be able to take it? Omrim Nachman, the truth is, Hamatnik the Messiah Leilamar Shmuel. The following bright is actually a raya to Shmuel, I think. But the thing is that Huna Chavri Mukim Labamile Achrina. My friend Huna over here insists that it's talking about a different case in order to make it not a riot to Shmuel. I don't think he's being reasonable. To me, it's a riot to Shmuel. Look what it says in this bright. The Tanya. Hamocher Sadel Chavira. Marei Otsami Tachet Yado. Kishu Gove Gove Ata Keren Minachasim Shubadim. Okay, what happened over here? Somebody sells a field, and now it's being taken from him. Again, the Mashmot is being taken from him in court. Everything is illegal. Turns out, now, I don't know what the case is. We'll explain it in a moment by analyzing it. But it says over here that when he is coming back now to collect from the mocher, he has a right to collect the keren, the value that he paid for the piece of property itself, even from the chasim shubadim, and the shevach he is gove min chasim b'nei chorim, and he is now able to collect his shevach back only if the seller has property now. But he's collected the shevach. Why is he collecting the shevach? Why couldn't he tell the Baal Chov to get out of here and not take his sprinkler system? So apparently Shmuel is right. A Baal Chov can collect shevach, okay? Because otherwise this doesn't make any sense. Now, Rav Huna insists that no, he's bukim lo b'milei achrinim. He says it's talking about a gazlan. A lokeach b'gazlan. And a dafka, the lokeach of the gazlan, were over there, the victim is going to take back his field. The guy's going to be screaming, but my sprinkler system, sir. You came into my field, installed a sprinkler system. You could present me with a list of your costs for the sprinkler system. And if the improvement now is worth your costs, I'll pay you your costs. Or if it's more than the costs, I'll pay you your costs.
If you invested $100,000 on a sprinkler system and I could only get $10,000 more for this piece of property, I ain't paying you the cost either. I'll pay you the extra $10,000. But I mean, you know, do me no favors. I ask you not to come into my field to install sprinklers. So if I'm walking off with something, I pay the lesser of whatever it is. I'm going to pay either what it costs you if that's less than the improvement, or I'll pay the improvement if that's less than what you invested. But certainly, you're not going to tell me, wait, I want to take out it. Excuse me, this is my property. I don't want to see your face around here. Goodbye. You invested in something that you bought from a Goslin. So please don't talk to me. You can send me the bills in the mail, and we'll find out from an assessor whether I owe you any money, okay? All right. So then he says, Ravun, if we're talking about a Goslin, so obviously from a Goslin, the victim can recover over there. The cases of the Shevach, so there, if it's a lokeach migazlan, somebody bought now from the gazlan, the victim recovers the whole thing. Now he has to go back to the gazlan to recover. What does that have to do with Shmuel's minor? Okay, Tanya Ina. Now, there's another bright that gets into this in a little bit more complex way. Here, we're talking about a balchov, the feirish. Somebody sells a field to another guy, and this guy invests in that field. And indeed, it was his field. Problem was that there comes along a balchov. The balchov now is toref the field. So now, kishuhu goveh, if he's coming now to collect his investment, it depends. Im hashevach yeter al hayetziyah, if the additional improvements were worth more than he invested to create those improvements. So let's say he invested $10,000 into the field, and now the improvement was worth $100,000. He now pays the entire thing back to the balchov. So now, in that case, he is going to come to the seller, and he's going to tell the seller that, you know, you were nene from my shevach because it removed the loan that you owed. Now your loan is paid up. So the shevach he takes from the balakarka who sold him this karka. So any additional value that he, let's say he had, in this case it was $90,000. So he gives, now he says, look, I want the $90,000 that I get for my improvements. I could have gotten on the open market. Instead, I got it from your balchov, basically, meaning from you. Because I paid those $90,000 for you to somebody. And that was part of our arrangement. If I pay it, you pay me back. I want that back. The actual costs I can recover directly from the balchov. And I can say, okay, you're going to get a field that's worth $100,000 more because of what I put into it. Albeit this guy may owe you that additional shevach, but you owe me the money that I invested in order to create that shevach. Now, lemaisa, at the end of the day, we're going to find out that what we're talking about over here, according to Rashi, was that he really only owed an additional $90,000. So therefore, the $90,000 was the benefit of the seller, which was now paid off to the guy that's taking it. But he tells the balchov, but wait 1 minute over here. You're taking $100,000 extra. That additional money, give back to me right now. Because you're walking off with my costs. So give me back my costs. So fine. That he gets back, indeed, the yitziyah, he gets out from the balchov. But if he ended up investing more money than the shevach was worth, so then when he tries to collect that money from the balchov, he says, look, you know, I paid back your loan. Yes, you did indeed. How much did you pay back? $110,000. Well, how much? I'm sorry, $105,000. Okay. How much did it cost you to get that additional $5,000? $10,000. I mean, that's your problem. That's not my problem. I mean, I didn't ask you to invest that, did I? So if the yitziyah is yetera ala sheva, so then he can't claim that I want the $10,000 that it cost me to pay back $5,000, the extra $5,000 to the balchov, because how am I going to pay in another $5,000 to pay him back an additional only half of what it cost you? Ella, all he gets over there is the hotza'ah shi'ur ha-sheva. You can get over there the amount of the hotza'ah is from the balchov, and you can't go back. The other guy says, well, I didn't get any benefit out of it. Now, in this case, I want to understand how Shmuel will explain it. Because according to Shmuel, it does not seem to make any sense at all. Look, but my mukim law. If we're talking about a case of a lokeach migazlan, okay, then how do you explain the first case where the shevach was worth more? It's kasha reisha. Shmuel, remember, said that a lokeach for migazlan does not have shevach at all because it's mitzvah to rebit, right? And over here, it's talking about in great detail that he takes the shevach from the Baal HaKarka, who in this case is the Goslin. So, according to Shmuel, how could he be taking something that he has no right to? He's asking for $100,000 worth of improvements, which is pure rebit, according to Shmuel, mirsik rebit. So that doesn't make sense. So then kasher resha. If it's talking about a balchov, nothing makes sense. Then it's kasher resha and the sefer. Because it says over here the balchov pays for the yitziyah. How in the world does the balchov pay for the yitziyah in either case? If according to Shmuel, the balchov has a right to collect sheva, and does not have to deduct anything from him. You have to deal with the deductions. You have to deal with the seller. So this runs against Shmuel. One way or the other, this thing does not work according to Shmuel. Either it doesn't work according to Shmuel's psak, that ain't no Shevach, or it doesn't work according to Shmuel, who claims that a Balchov can walk off with the Shevach. Something is terribly wrong over here. Says the Gemara, I can make it work out either way. Because remember, we have our beautiful out that Rabbi Yosef gave us. Rabbi Yosef says there's... You know that you can never, from this point on, once I told you my pshat, you can no longer ask a kasha on Shmuel. Because there's always a stock answer. We're talking about that there was karka. And if there was karka at the time, then remember that Rav Yosef claimed that Shmuel was made. It's not mixed like a ribbit. So what's wrong? So over here it's talking about that the mocher, the gazlan, had karka. And over there you do have a right. So I could say it's talking about a locher mi gazlan. And it's talking about kishyesh lo karka. And therefore it's not mixed like a ribbit. Or according to the second Lashon of Rabbi Yosef, it's talking about that it was Kanu Miyado, and therefore it's not Mirzikiri Bid, since the whole thing was done anyway, in the guise of a sale, and not in the guise of a loan. So where it's not Mirzikiri Bid, it doesn't bother us. Inami Bishikanu Miyado. And now we know that there's no way to ever ask a question on Shmuel, unless it says Beferish, that the guy has no karka. But as long as it's possible to understand the case where there's karka, at the time and over here, I mean, obviously he has karka now, because it's saying he's gova b'nechosim b'necharin. So then, I mean, what's so bad about saying that that karka was here the whole time? Okay, so there's no problem. But you know what? It can even work out if we're talking about Balchov. You buy tame of Balchov. So you say, what? A Balchov? I thought a Balchov walks off with the Shevach, whether he pays for it or not. And then the guy who wants his own za'ot deals with the seller. No, it could be talking about a Balchov v'lo kasha. It depends on what type of Shevach. If you're talking about Shevach HaMagia L'Ktafayim, say that you invested in something. Remember how Rashi learns all over Magia L'Ktafayim means you planted bananas and they're now shoulder height, so to speak. So basically, it's ready for harvesting. If it's ready for harvesting, you can't view it as part of the ground. So in that case, once it's already ready for harvesting, over there, it's called the equivalent of peyrot, even though it may still ripen by leaving it on the ground. So it's not a good idea to harvest it, but it doesn't really need the ground. Over there, the balchov could be gova, but he has to pay for it because it's the equivalent of peyrot. So that could be one explanation. And when Shmuel was saying that he can walk off, it's talking about b'shavach she'enu magia l'ktafayim. There he can walk off with it. Wait a minute. I mean, remember, we had this entire sugya back in Bava Kamma, if you recall. So v'amasim b'chol yom. But Shmuel paskins every single day in court. I mean, there's hundreds of precedents for this. That Shmuel paskins that a balchov can actually walk off with shevach. Even with Shevach that has reached the stage which could be marketed separately. Oh, okay, fine. You're right. But there's a difference, isn't there, of how much you owe. It's a low kasha. How the masik ba kashiur ara v'shvacha, v'how the low masik ba ela kashiur ara. I must tell you that there are many mefarshim utayna, that Rashi's girsa here must have been slightly different. And instead of saying, how the low masik ba ela kashiur ara, what it said was, how the low masik ba kashiur ara v'shvacha. Because, as I explained to you earlier, the way we understand the sugya, I'll leave it to Rashi, is that you did owe more than the karka, but not more than the value of the shevach that was above the yitziyah. And that's why you have a right. The guy's collecting 110,000 when he was really only owed now 109,000, or just collected 190,000, whatever the case was. So that amount that it cost to create that additional value wasn't owed him. If that wasn't owed him, then in fact he's taking more than he's owed. So there he pays the money back. That could be the case. In a case now where it wasn't kishur arav ishvacha, so fine, inachinami, you of course will pay him back. If, however, it's actually masik bay kishur arav ishvacha, so then he'll have to come back to the seller and get it back from the seller. What's the big deal? So Shmuel, like all these cases that you bring masim b'chol yom, where he's gove even shevach hamagia l'ktafayim, that's talking about a case where he actually was owed the value of the shevach that's magia l'ktafayim completely. Whereas the case we were talking about here that you were asking on Shmuel is referring to a case where I put in $10,000 to create an additional total of $100,000 of actual value. This guy was owed the value of the karka plus $90,000, not plus $100,000. So the $10,000 of the yitziyah, that's what it says over in the Braita. The yitziyah is meant to be collected from the person who's walking off with the shevach, who is the Baal Chov, who is now very happy. He got paid back his loan. The only thing is that since he has more money than he should, he's going to have to now pay me back $10,000 in cash. That's all.
If he doesn't want the shevach, how do you force him to take? He doesn't want to spend what he wants. He wants...
He doesn't have a choice in what he wants. He wants to collect his money. Here's where his money is.
You're forcing him not to pay the sprinklers, which he doesn't want.
Okay, don't take them. Leave 10% of the property to me. Why are you walking off with 100% of the property, which is now worth more than your own? How can you walk off with more than your own? So either you pay for the additional value, or you leave it and don't collect it, that piece. Only collect what you're owed. That's fair. As a matter of fact, asks the Gemara, there's another problem here. What do you mean he walks off with the property but pays me for my investment? Why can't I say to him, excuse me, sir, you have a lien against property. How much is that lien for against property? The property that was here. He says, well, the lien was against a piece of property I had now $1 million in. Okay, and how much does he owe you? He owes me $1,090,000. Okay, so what I'm going to do for you, sir, is I am going to pay you what your lien was, and you're going to leave this property alone because I don't want you to take the property. Is that okay? That's a machlokas. But suppose you hold like the Mandi Amar who says that a lien doesn't give you rights to property. A lien gives you rights to collection, right? So now, why can't the buyer, who now invested all this money, say to the Baal Chov, look, I don't have any cash, okay? So I don't want you to take my property. But I don't have any cash. I'm stuck because you have a lien. But you owe me $100,000. You owe me $10,000 for what you're taking above and beyond, right? Okay. I don't want your cash. I want you to leave that behind in the property. Because if I had that cash, I could buy you out. Okay, I do have that cash. But that cash is in your wallet. It's the money that you owe me for the shevach. So now, keep the cash and leave the property to me. I mean, obviously not the whole property, but that $9,000 worth of property, whatever the case was, right? So, hey, Nicha says to him, look, I mean, I understand that if you view a lien as giving you absolute rights of collection and the other guy can't even buy you out, which I'd like to do. I'd like to buy you out, and then I'll go back to the seller, and I'll say, look, in order to keep the property, I had no choice but to pay off your loan. In order to cancel a mortgage on the property that I didn't even know existed, and now I want it back from you, that he can do that. He can't do that. So then this makes sense. That even that if the Baal Chov insists that the lien gives him a right to the actual piece of property, that you can't pay him off, okay, then all of this makes sense. So then shopper. But if you hold like the Mandi Amar who says that if the buyer has cash and he's liquid, he can simply pay off the mortgage and the one who made the mortgage in the first place can't actually collect the property. The most he has is the right to demand payment. And if the guy wants to pay him, so he can't take away anything. I mean, we know the horrible cases of banks that make loans or lend mortgage companies that make loans because they want to get the property, not because they want their money back. But they figure, bedafka, they'll make a loan where the guy can't afford the loan, and then they get the piece of property that they want to put up the shopping center on. Okay, so that indeed is a machloket, whether they ever have the ability to force you to relinquish your rights to the property. If you hold the Koyke Mandi Amar who says that, no, they never get that right. You can always pay them back. So that he's Matzi Misadaka the Baal Chov. So then why can't he tell the Baal Chov in this case, look, buddy, Ilo Havi Li Zuzi, if I had cash, I'd get you off of this piece of property in a flash. Say, Havi Misakincha Mikula Ara, would have gotten you out of here with a gun, off of the whole property. So now I don't have any cash, but I do have a little bit of cash. It happens to be in your wallet. So Ashta the Letli Zuzi, at least leave me the little piece of land, Havli Garba the Arab Ara Shur Shvachai. I mean, whatever you owed me for the shevach, you have to leave it to me in cash, meaning in property. Not that I should go running after you. I want that piece of property. Now, and of course, that will create terrible problems for the brilliant mortgage issuer whose vision was we get the little house out of here. Well, you maybe get the little house out of here, but not the little outhouse out of here. What? In the middle of my shopping center? Well, you know, if I had cash, I could have gotten you off the whole thing, so my outhouse is going to remain here. Okay? So why can't he do that? So, how we got the arbitrage? Says the Gemara.
It works out even according to the Man Yomar, who says that you do have a right to pay back. Because sometimes mortgages are written as apotekis. And an apoteki means, apotekoi, this is the thing that you own already for taking your payment out. Not that it's a secured lien against properties in general, but rather this piece of property is specifically mortgaged to you. In that case, everybody agrees. The Yomar le lo yelecha piron elamizu, everyone agrees that you can't pay him off with money if you are a buyer. And if you default on the mortgage, he gets to collect the property. And that's exactly what he did over here. I'm starting to lose faith. do you want to stop here? Or do you want to add a little electricity to your batteries? We have a reasonably simple issue coming up here, which really won't take all that much concentration. And is not based on all of the complex issues that we've dealt with until now. Okay, what we want to discuss right now is what happens if the guy knows that a property was stolen. I mean, all of this is based on best efforts and due diligence, the protection of buyers. But how about if a buyer actually knowingly engages in this type of purchase? Now, that is something, of course, that's concerning us all along underneath the level of our consciousness, but it's clearly, it should affect the way we're going to deal with it. That's what the Gemara wants to talk about now. But before we continue, let me once again just remind you of the issues that we've been discussing so that they don't all become a vast mishmash in your mind, because it's really straightforward, contemporary issues that come up every single day, ma'asim b'chol yom, as the Gemara says. What we're worried about over here is title guarantees. Simple as that. You bought a piece of property. Who is going to pay you if there's a problem with the title? Now, there's two issues that may go wrong with a title. Either there was a pre-existing lien, so that this property was mortgaged and you didn't even know about it. So now what we do in modern terms is we provide insurance. And that's called title insurance, and we let the insurance company deal with the problem. They'll go after the seller and so on. But here we don't have title insurance. So that means that the seller is going to be the one that's going to have to supply, if this guy wants insurance for his title, it's going to have to be supplied by the seller himself. Fine. Then there's two other questions. Assuming that you have, so there's two ways that things could go wrong, as I said. Either he never owned the property in the first place, it was uncertain title or out and out gazela, or there was a mortgage against it. So who's going to pay you now for the terrible loss that you incurred when the court comes and takes away $1 million worth of property from you? You bought a home and now it turns out not to be your home. What happened? But there's another issue. You paid $1 million for the home, but then you put in another $1 million of improvements. Or you paid $1 million for a farm, and now you invested another $100,000 to get this year's crops. Or both. You invested $100,000 in the sprinkler system, plus another $100,000 in order to fertilize and so on to be able to get your crops this year. So now you come to the title insurance. Well, I mean, you know, you didn't say anything about that. We gave you insurance for the title. Anyway. So we have different ways of constructing guarantees for that, which we've spoken about, which is called shi'ibuda. So can you collect from the seller's property with a lien? So that even if he sells it out from under your nose, you could still go and collect from his secondary buyers who bought after you bought. That would allow you to go ahead with a shibud and collect. Can you collect shevach? That's a separate clause. Can you collect peirot? That's a separate clause. Can you collect from the best of his property, or can he throw you the piece of junk that you're going to be struggling with for years to buy? That's a separate clause called shufra. So there we know that we have boilerplate contracts that you can insert shibud, shvacha, pire, and sheva. Shufra, shibud, pire, and sheva. Okay? But you have to ask, we said. It's not automatic. You have to ask how you want the contract constructed. If you have a good sofer, you know, he's a good attorney, he's going to be very careful. He's going to make sure that he's in your corner because you're paying him for writing out the shtar for you, and he takes the place of what in modern terms is the attorney who's creating the contract. Here's the sofer who creates the contract. So it's all very, very easily translatable into contemporary terms of ma'asim b'choyon. We have our attorney, we have our problems, we have our title insurance, and we have different ways of constructing contracts so that you're covered in better ways or worse. All very straightforward. Now, the problem is that we said over here there may be different situations as to what exactly happens if your problem is with a mortgage holder and that's why your property got taken away, or if your problem is that he never had title to it in the first place and that's why your property got taken away. And what started us on this rolling adventure was the fact that Shmuel said, look, you should know that if the title wasn't a good title in the first place, not that there was a lien against it, if the title wasn't a good title and he sells you a property that didn't have title to, then there never was a sale. So if there never was a sale, we end up looking at what is essentially a disguised loan. Because when you gave him money, you weren't giving him money for property because there wasn't any property. It was an illusion. So that means that anybody looking says, well, looky, looky, this guy gave him $1 million and takes back $1,100,000 because he promised him to pay it back for Shevach and so on and so forth. No way, Jose. That borders on rebit, and people will look at it as rebit, and we cannot tolerate that type of transaction. So now that led us to all of these questions of what do we do with the boilerplate that says Shevach? How do you explain that if there's not going to be any Shevach? We had all the cases about whether you can collect that Shevach from the Chassid Mishubadim or the Chassid B'nai Chorin, and according to Shmuel, there shouldn't be any Shevach. So we had all kinds of explanations. That's what we've been dealing with. We ended up essentially with a boilerplate explanation, which is that according to Shmuel, there certainly will be Shevach in certain cases, such as when there was property at the time of the sale that could cover it, or that he's paying him back in property, the way Rashi understands it, or that he initially didn't just write in a contract that he's going to cover the Shevach. He actually made a kinyan at the time of the sale on that Shevach. So then it doesn't look like rebit because there hadn't been yet any money that had been had changed hands. Okay, whatever the case may be. Then we had another question, which gets a little bit more complicated, but you could see how easily and straightforward it needs to be handled. The fact is that the person who's coming to recover his property is going to walk off with the ownership of that property, whether you invested in it or not, or whether it's got payroll in it or not. What he's going to tell you is, buddy, you walked into my field, my house, made investments in it, and now you want me to wait to take back my house. You're no different than any other idiot who was trying to demonstrate the great value of his home improvements by walking into my home when I wasn't there, like they do on these TV shows, and putting in all this money for the improvements, and now you're going to present me with a bill. Okay? We'll talk about the bill, but goodbye. Now, of course, the din of the bill we're going to handle. Then it depends whether the increase in value was equal to the money that was expended in order to get it to that value, and or whether it was less. We'll always pay the less. That's the rule. You can't force somebody to pay for improvements that he didn't want. Okay, wonderful. Then we got into the problem, however, about a Baal Chov. Now, a Baal Chov cannot, you would think, walk off with things that didn't exist at the time that he took the lien. So now if the buyer goes ahead and approves the property, what right does the Baal Chov have to walk off with it? Nonetheless, Shmuel said that a Baal Chov can take Shevach. So we understood that this is because of the nature of the contract, Rav explained. That since a guy writes in a contract, I will cover you, in the event that a mortgage holder walks off with a property with your investments, and you accept that, you will come after me, it means that it's understood that the mode of the transaction is the acceptance of the buyer that his recourse is to the seller and not to the Baal Chov. That was Shmuel's chiddush. And indeed, we said there would be a difference between a bill of sale or a gifting contract, because a gifting contract doesn't include those clauses as a boilerplate. Okay? So far, so good. Now, the thing where we got a little bit confused was where the Baal Chov does not necessarily have a claim against the entire value. Maybe he has a claim only to the amount of the value of the improvement minus the investment cost to create the improvement. Who pays what? Do you have to go back to the buyer to get the money that you invested? Or since the Baal Chov wants to walk off with it, you can ask him to pay you in cash before he's able to walk off with it. Reasonable question. We get into questions of what is called improvements and what are called things that don't even give him a right to walk off with at all. Let's say there's payroll here that are almost ready to take the market. Can he walk off with that? Or can I say, look, tomorrow they're going to be able to be harvested? I mean, it's ridiculous for you to walk off with the property today and then tell me you're going to pay me only what I invested to get these payroll. That's called Shevach HaMagia L'Ktafayim. So in Ochinami, in that case, perhaps he can't. And yet, the Gemara says, but Shmuel did collect Shevach HaMagia L'Ktafayim because it's not yet literally payroll. It's still on the ground and is benefiting from being on the ground, even though it doesn't absolutely need the ground. Okay, so we made the distinction between walking off with Shevach, where that Shevach is actually owed to the Baal Chov, including its investment value, or where the Baal Chov was not owed the entire amount. So these are all such straightforward issues that once you see it as a practical thing, you can imagine it could occur to you tomorrow, yourself. So what appear to be esoteric issues are extremely straightforward, Again, the way the Gemara always gets to it, it takes a simple nut and then starts cracking up the nut open, and then you see that there's millions of pieces that you're going to have to now put together that you didn't even realize were there. But looking back in retrospect, the Gemara was talking about the most obvious, simple issues that needed to be addressed. We understand the machlokas on every level over here. You can conceive of why this approach is reasonable, why that approach is reasonable, and don't tell yourself that this was a hopelessly complicated sugya. Once we look back at it, we can see it as being very, very simple. And now it's definitely tomorrow. Tomorrow, we will look at what about cases where people knowingly are involved in buying illegal properties, where they know that the guy doesn't own the property. Do we also have all these protections in place? That we'll talk about tomorrow. Rabba Baravuna Amar, Kagon Shinitalua Masiki. So, Banigzalik Vot Karen, Govem Menachasim Meshubadim, Banigzalik Vot Perot, Govem Menachasim Menechorim. Rabba lo amar ki Rabba Baravuna, because it says Yotze B'tachat Yodo means Medina, not the pirates, mashma. And Rabba Baravuna lo amar ki Rabba, Hare Yotze B'tachat Yodo, he means Be'ina, mashma, not as a broken up oil field. Rabba Shomar, Litzdodim Katon. There never was a problem. Kagon Shigozal Soda B'chaveirom Melei Apeirom. So if the lokeach is coming to begove his keren, he's going to cause him a shumanim. If the nigzal is coming to begove his perot, he's going to cause him a shumanim. What's the problem? Now, bein l'rava, bein l'rava baruhuna. How do you have a right to collect from the chasim anyway? It's a milval peh. Milval peh no government of chasim and shumanim. No, chma eskinan. Kishamad bedin v'hadar zavit. You could say the same thing. Yishamad bedin ala. No, answer the morning. Yishamad bedin ala keren. V'lohamad bedin ala pirot. Ah, come off it. Man, my pascha. No, it's not pascha. It's tamad amilta. Ki tava inish karna tava bereish. But he wants to be held up in court for 20 years. V'sova shmul. Okev megazan let le shivacha. V'omer le shmul rabchinina bar shilat. I'm telling you right now, as a proper attorney, so far, amlich v'chtov, Shufra, Shivcha, Uperi. So now, but my, Iba Balchov, be itle peri. Vamashwil Balchov, govet, Shevach, Shevach, ena, the pero below. Ela lav, below kech, migazlan. Omer of Yosef, what's the problem? Magmais, getting gigar, sheshlo, karka. So, zamir, zikribit. Omele, abavachi, mutar, little votes, abis, abavach, sheshlo, karka. Omele, what's the comparison? Matam, halva'a. Hocha, the whole thing is really zvini anyway. So you can never come to churibit. A big deal. No, but that's because it's alva'ah. Gufa, and I'll prove that to you. Look at the boilerplate contract. Quote. Ana ekum va'ashpi va'atke va'amrik zvini ilin inun va'amaleon v'shivcheon. Ve'ekum kadamach, and now you agree. Ve'tzavi zvina danan ve'kovel alui. Omer l'b'chir barav in l'rava, you're saying it's only the result of the boilerplate. Elamiyata matana. De'lo k'tiv la'yachi achinami l'otar v'shvacha. Omer l'ayin, it's exactly what I'm saying. Ve'chiyaf ve'kov matanim imecha. Omer l'ayin, why not? Yofa ve'yofa. Omer l'nachman, amat nita misayeya le'lamar shmuel. But Huna Chavin insists that it's talking about mili achrini. The Tanya. Hamocha sodom lechavero. Vare yotze mitachat yado. Kishu gove. Gove ta keren menachasim mishubadim v'shevako menachasim menachorin. And Huna Chavin claims that it's talking about b'mili achrine, namely b'loker migazlan, and therefore doesn't have any implications for a balchov. Tanya yidach hamocha sodom lechavero v'ishbicha. Uba balchov v'torfa. Kishu gove ima shevach yoter alitzia. Notel et ha-shevach mi-ba'al ha-karka, va-yitziyah mi-ba'al ha-chov. Vima-yitziyah yitir al-ha-shevach, then eno el-ha-otza'ah, the shiur of the shevach, and that he takes from the ba'al ha-chov. Now, explain to me, Shmuel b'may mukim la, if he's referring to a case of lokev mi-gazlan, so then the ratio doesn't make any sense. Do you know Shmuel lokev mi-gazlan? Anyway, let le-shvacha. And if he's talking about ba'al ha-chov, then nothing makes sense. Kasher reisha v'sefer, because Shmuel holds that Balchov is going with the Shevach and doesn't have to pay at all. In a case where Yeshua Karka, like Rav Yosef said, or in a case of Kishir Kono Miyado, in the other case of Rav Yosef, and Ibaitema Balchov, Velokasha. Kan Bashevach HaMagia Lektefayim, Kan Bashevach Shein HaMagia Lektefayim. והמעשים בכל יום וקומג בשבוע, אפילו בשבח המגיע לכתפיים, there's a difference, isn't there? הודה מעסיק בית ישיר אורה בשבחה, הודה לא מעסיק בית ישיר אורה בשבחה, is apparently Rashi's Gersa. דיוב לי שבחה ומסלק לי. זה איניך למען יאמר, אית לי זוזי ללוקח, לא מעצי מסלק לי לבלחוב. Fine, then shop here. But if you hold, let him say you could take the house, but you can't have the aras. So at least because where everyone is moda that there's no way out of the collection just because you try to pay him up. He kira ba she'ina shalom. We didn't do.